This is the Utah Politics Podcast from the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm your host, Brian Schott. January 17th, 1998 was the day that everything changed in the news business. On that day, a mostly entertainment-focused website, The Drudge Report, broke the blockbuster story that President Bill Clinton had an affair with White House intern Monica Lewinsky. From that point on, Matt Drudge became one of the most influential voices in American politics. But who is Matt Drudge? Journalist Matthew Leshak digs into that question and unpacks Drudge's impact on American journalism and politics in his book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a Gift Shop Clerk with an Internet Connection Took Down the Mainstream Media. Leshak joins me on the podcast in a moment to discuss Matt Drudge and the changes he wrought when he published that story. We'll get to that conversation in a moment. But first, if you enjoy this podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review online or sharing it on social media. We're just getting started, and that helps new people find the show. Now, here's my conversation with Matthew Leshak. Joining me today on the podcast is Matthew Leshak. He is the author of a new book, The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a Gift Shop Clerk with an Internet Connection Took Down the Mainstream Media. You might also know him from his previous book, Newtown, An American Tragedy. I read that book. It was a great piece of reporting. Matthew, thank you for taking a few moments out of your day. I've really been looking forward to this opportunity to talk to you about Matt Drudge.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
You know, okay, so Matt Drudge, most of the people know that he really hit the big time politically in 1998 when he published the Monica Lewinsky story that Newsweek had passed on. And that just exploded him into the public consciousness. And that moment, you know, it kind of changed journalism in the United States. But let's start by, from your research, who is Matt Drudge? Because you've gone way back and looked and dug up a lot of stuff from his childhood, a lot from his past. He's really a reclusive figure. From your research, who is he and why has he become so important in the American political sphere?
So your intro is, you're right on about many of the things you said. And who is Matt Drudge? I would argue that there's no single individual in our generation who's had more of an impact on the way we consume information than Matt Drudge. And we know nothing about this guy. You're right. He's a complete recluse at this point. It's hard to find somebody who's had more of an influence, not just on the way we consume information, but on politics. So dating back to the late 90s, every single major campaign has had to have on staff somebody known as a Drudge Whisperer. This is a staffer whose main job was to make a connection and possibly potentially influence the Drudge Report website. That is the kind of power you can't buy. And I look at it as an American phenomenon. And this story, which traces Matt's roots back to a young man who came from a highly dysfunctional family with virtually no education. He graduated, I believe it was 351st out of 365 students. And that's in his high school graduating class. And he was able to rise all the way to usurp the entire media landscape of the day on its edge. It's an absolutely fascinating story.
Any news reporter or producer worth their weight and worth their salt, you know, they've got to look at that website every single day. And he's got the power to completely upend a news cycle, you know, by publishing a story. I mentioned this to you before we start recording, but I actually have a little bit of a history with Matt Drudge. When I was really young back in Denver in 1994 or 1995, I was producing an overnight talk show on KOA for the late Rick Barber. And it was kind of great because Rick kind of was good for getting strange guests, getting people who were out kind of obscure. And I had stumbled across the Drudge Report website, but this is when he was reporting on entertainment issues. I think his big story was he was getting scoops from inside the Hollywood studios about what a disaster the movie Waterworld was. And this was before the movie even came out, but it was just spending all this money and people were getting fired and there were fights on set. And he was getting a lot of scoops out of that. And I found that interesting. And the other draw to his site was he had a webcam pointed out of his apartment window at Hollywood and Vine in downtown Los Angeles. And so I had reached out to him, asked him if he would come on. And he came on once a month for a couple of months, almost a year on the show. And it was really interesting because I will never forget every time that I would reach out to him via email, I never got his phone number. He would call us. But I would answer the phone and he would always go, "This is Drudge." And then we'd have a nice conversation, you know. I mean, but he was really entertainment focused at that time. And so it's astonishing to me how important he's become because of one story that he was able to publish and break, and almost and he essentially led to the impeachment of an American president.
I would take it a little further. I would argue that it wasn't just that one story. I would argue that Matt. So that's a fascinating story, by the way. And as I said to you off air, where were you for my book? I would have loved to interview you. I did interview over 200 people, and I'm not sure how I missed you. But yeah, Matt began. He went to Hollywood, no education, and he was walking on Hollywood and near Vine, and there was a newspaper shop, and he went in, and he would always go through the newspapers. He was always a newspaper junkie, and he would see like what lead he thought was bad. He'd make notes on what entertainment stories were happening, and he saw an ad in Variety magazine for $5 an hour to be a showrunner on The Price is Right, which his job was to move the sets around in between commercial breaks. And he impressed his bosses enough where they hired him then at the CBS gift shop. From there, he learned that they were throwing the Nielsen ratings into the trash a day before they were being released publicly. He learned the custodial staff's schedule and realized there was a 2-hour window where he could go and take the trash out before the custodians disposed of it. He was able to publish the Nielsen ratings early. Listening at the CBS shop, he was then in the orbit of some of the CEOs, memos being passed around. Realized early on, for instance, that Jerry Seinfeld was asking for $500,000 an episode. He was the first to break that. He knew that Connie Chun was going to be fired before Connie Chun knew that she was going to be fired. He put it online. So like leading up, but it's interesting that you mentioned Clinton then, because today I've done maybe 50 interviews already to publicize the book. And the first question I always get is, Matt Drudge, why is the Drudge Report not conservative anymore? And I try to explain how Matt is perceived as conservative, but because of that Clinton story, because that was what really broke him into national prominence. But Matt's a Hollywood guy. He is being viewed through this political lens, but the truth is Matt's loyalty isn't to any political party or ideology. His loyalty is to his website. So Matt's been playing this game for a long time, and I have to tell you, he's an absolute genius at it.
I would agree with that. And I was going to bring that up because that's the pinned tweet on your Twitter. As I was doing my research for this interview, and you said, you know, people, they make the mistake, they look at him through a political lens. And the fact is, he doesn't have an ideology. And that's an absolutely brilliant way to look at it. And I think that that's what people miss. And the stories that you told about him publishing the Nielsen's early and finding those stories, I think that that's his talent. His talent is he has a nose for stories that are going to get people's attention. I mean, that I think is part of his genius, that he's able to find a nugget in a story, and you know, and the lead might be buried, but he'll find the part that sparks outrage, that sparks intention, that sparks attention, that people want to share it. And I think that that is more than anything is his talent and his genius, that he knows what's going to get someone's attention. He knows what people are going to be talking about, and he's able to find that and get it out there.
Yeah. And I wanted you're very astute. I wanted to touch on something you mentioned earlier, which 99.9% of people don't understand. And it's that pivotal moment back when Matt Drudge published the Newsweek story and how it changed everything. I've been in media all my life, and those in your audience who are old enough will remember when we had about 5 networks. We had ABC, NBC, CBS, a little PBS, and a little Fox Broadcasting. But a handful of editors and news broadcasters essentially served as gatekeepers for the media. They decided what we had access to and what we didn't. They knew about JFK's affairs. They didn't think we needed to know. And they knew things about Reagan they didn't think we needed to know. Well, when this intern had an affair with the president of the United States, and Newsweek decided that the public did not need to know this information at that time. And I spoke to Michael Isikoff, the reporter who did the actual reporting on the story, at length for this. And it was really interesting from his perspective, because we all look at that moment through this perspective of, well, internet news. No, there was none at that point. It was at the birthplace. But when Matt Drudge pushed enter, when Lucianne Goldberg called him and gave him that story, which is in my book, Matt Drudge pushed enter, that changed everything. No longer do we have these gatekeepers. There is no holding a story. You don't hold a story anymore. Everything's out there all the time. And when we want to look back, when we're having this huge discussion about media right now, how do we get to this place? Why are we here? It starts at that moment, period. And that changed everything. And, you know, for better and worse, like, I'm a big fan of us having all the information and letting the public decide. There's but this comes with pitfalls. That means that the public deserves the media they get.
I agree with that 100%. And I don't think I could have ever put that any better, that the public deserves the media they get. Speaking of Michael Isikoff, I'm a huge fan of his. I love his writing. And I listened to his podcast, Skulldog Duggery, where he, in one of the early episodes, was talking about this, where the Newsweek website was where they just published last week's issue. They didn't write for the internet. Nobody wrote for the internet. Nobody put anything out on the internet. And when Drudge scooped them, they had to make the decision to write a story that went on their website first, because Drudge had changed everything by getting this out there, because they weren't scheduled to publish for another week. So they had to decide, do we wait a week and do our version of this story, or do a follow on it, or do we put it out on the website? And they actually had to do that. And so I agree with you 100%. That took the gatekeeper out of it. It changed the way that the media is. And now, you know, I'm sitting here with my cell phone. Everybody has a TV station in their pocket. Everybody has a news, their own publishing platform in their pocket. And, you know, you can draw a direct line from that moment where Drudge published that to where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think academia, one of the reasons I wanted to write this book was because I feel like academia all too often dismisses the power of the individual. They look at everything in terms of these historic waves, like history happens in weather events. And I take a different outlook. I think that that moment was this perfect storm, this marriage between technology, media, and one man's pure sheer force of will, who came again. I mean, it's a Madison story is remarkable because he's probably the richest journalist in the world. His net worth is estimated at north of $100 million. And it was a medium that he took control of and owned. And, you know, I have a part of my book where I go through that part with Isikoff and all the players involved. And it's fascinating to me because we have Lucianne Goldberg and Linda Tripp, who gave me one of her last interviews before she passed. And they all were going to Isikoff because Isikoff was a true, and he still is, a true reporter. Like, he was the only one conservatives felt like they could go to back at the time who would give them a fair shake. But when Isikoff said, you know what, I can't run this yet. He didn't say I was never going to run it. He said, I can't run it yet. They finally had another place to go. Ann Coulter, Lucianne Goldberg knew who Matt was, but Ann Coulter was friends with him. And Ann Coulter kept being like, go to Matt Drudge. And Lucianne told me that she called Matt Drudge up and gave him the entire story. And she said, 1 hour later, she got a call and it was online that quickly, which was unheard of. And she said to herself, the world has changed and it will never be the same. According to the Star Report, an hour after that, Bill Clinton was in the Oval Office going on what website? The Drudge Report. And he knew the White House and his entire administration was suddenly on fire.
It's not often that you can point to an exact moment where something like that changed. You got people who know Drudge to talk to you. That's a Herculean task in and of itself, because I've read stories about him and you've gotten a lot of people who've worked with him to open up. That's really quite a journalistic achievement, because he is so protective of him, of his own life and where he lives. You know, there's a portion of the book where you went to his house and knocked on his door and nobody answered. You went to another house in Arizona that's under his name. Nobody answered there. I really got to commend you that you didn't just try to look at his impact, but you tried to look at the man, and you got some people to give you some color to flesh that out. So I think that that's a really great bit of reporting, because I know how hard it is, because the guy is just, I mean, he's kind of like a ghost.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. And man, so I wanted to write this book eight years ago. Okay. And I was a journalist at the New York Daily News, and I was the crime reporter, meaning I would parachute into whatever city had a major tragedy, and I would try to get information. And so I felt like my skills as an investigative reporter and crime were pretty honed. And I went into trying to contact anybody who wanted to talk about Matt Drudge. And I was met with the proverbial door slam in the face repeatedly. And at the time, newspaper print editions were dwindling, and online revenue was, they were becoming more and more dependent with online revenue. And it was hard to get anybody to talk, because everybody who knew Matt was in the business virtually. And they were so afraid of making Matt Drudge upset that they, you know, wouldn't cooperate. But social media has taken a chunk out of Matt's popularity. So I revisited this idea a few years later, and I was shocked by the amount of cooperation I got. And part of the way I was able to get people to speak to me was I appealed to the sense of history. I explained, like, I don't want to take a political look at this. Like, I'm not going to do a bias hit job. I'm not going to do a puff piece. I just want to tell the story. And if I don't do it now, who will and when? And I was able to get remarkable support. Joseph Curl, the only full-time employee Matt's ever had, who never spoke about his time with Matt, gave a nuts and bolts account on how the Drudge Report worked. And one of the fascinating things he told me was, in the very beginning, Matt sat him down and said, the Drudge Report, we don't ride waves. We make them. We create the wave. So we post a story in the AM. Rush Limbaugh will talk about it in his A block. The White House press briefing, there'll be questions about it. That will spawn 400 news stories. By then, we're on to something else. And, you know, it wasn't just the people involved with Matt. It was over 200 interviews I conducted for this. But I was also able to get political operatives from both sides who served as a proverbial drudge whisperer. And they would discuss the give and take between how they would go about leveraging a Drudge Report to use to the advantage of their candidate and how Matt would use them, sharing emails with me. Matt would use them in turn to get page views. And it was this absolutely fascinating win-win situation. For people forget this. It wasn't just for Republicans. I have a Clinton operative, and people will be shocked to hear this, Tracy Seffel, who became friends with Matt for a while and worked as a Clinton's communication director. She broke her silence for the first time and spoke at length about how Matt Drudge, you know, would also write, the Clinton team would use Matt Drudge and knew the importance of Matt Drudge in the campaign against Obama. In addition to that, Trump, I can't think of a better example than how Donald Trump's team used him. And they were very smart because they used Jared Kushner as their connection to Matt. And he was a newspaper guy. He ran a New York Observer. And that worked out really well for a long time. And I have emails from the campaign that I published in the book to Matt Drudge showing this, how they were synchronized. Now, obviously, that isn't quite the case anymore.
And I was going to get to that because there's a fascinating part of the book where on election day, Drudge talks to Trump and says, you're going to win this, because people weren't believing the polls that, and the returns that were coming back. And then you talk about how Drudge was almost like a de facto advisor in the White House over the first 100 days. But then there was sort of a battle being fought through Jared Kushner, Drudge versus Steve Bannon. And that's really interesting because Breitbart really rose to prominence right around, you know, the 2015 into 2016 era. And so that's a fascinating interplay, watching these two, I guess not right-wing websites, but a right-wing website and the website that everybody goes to fighting for control. And it was being played out through Jared Kushner and in the White House, because Drudge was trying to get rid of Steve Bannon, and Bannon was trying to keep Drudge from being such an influence.
It's interesting because Bannon's role, and I spoke to a lot of people at Breitbart, Bannon's role in the Trump campaign was, you know, he's the one who helped come and turn it around early on. He pushed the populist movement, and that's right up Matt's wheelhouse. But Matt doesn't take slights lightly. And Bannon was overheard in the Breitbart newsroom following Andrew Breitbart's passing, talking about how they don't need Matt Drudge, how he owns Matt Drudge, as he was overheard saying this in the Breitbart newsroom. It got back to Matt. And from that point forward, Matt was not, there was a schism that formed, and it only grew, and it grew to such an extent that it trickled down and affected, I talk about this in my book, all these different layers of not only the Trump White House, but the Drudge Report, Breitbart.com. And then all these journalists underneath it had to take sides for a period of time.
I don't think anybody can, you know, actually speak for Matt Drudge, but I think you more than anybody would have an insight into maybe what drives him, what makes him tick. And people have been really interested in the fact that the Drudge Report has seemingly turned on Donald Trump in the last couple of years. And you made mention of that. Given what you know about Matt Drudge, and again, I'm not asking you to speak for him, But why do you think that that is? Why do you think that, you know, he's more apt to post stories that are less flattering to Trump than they were in the, you know, in the early stages of the Trump administration?
The same reason that back in 2008, when Andrew Breitbart was the AM editor, that Matt was posting stories critical of McCain and in favor of Obama. I believe that Matt Drudge is making a business calculation here. And like he's always done, he's really good at having his pulse on the American public and where it's at. And if you remember, he was out pretty early on Trump, like very early, where people were like, why is he supporting Trump? Trump's not a real candidate. That was a big question for a while. Well, Matt doesn't go to the DC parties. He's not part of that scene. Like, I think he still stays sort of connected to the grassroots. And he believed that Trump was, you know, the future.
Well, I remember that he was big on Trump in 2012 when Trump was making noise about possibly running.
Yeah, he looks at Trump as an American icon. You know, I can't, obviously, I don't get into psychobabble and trying to analyze Matt in my book. But what I do is I let Matt speak for himself a lot. And he gives an interview to Alex Jones. He shows up. It's a really fat, if your audience should listen to the interview, it's on YouTube. He just shows up at the studio. Now, this guy hasn't had his picture taken in years, doesn't give any interviews. He shows up at the Alex Jones show and Alex is shocked. It's an unannounced visit. And asks him to step into the light so that the cam can see him. And Matt refuses. He stays in the dark and gives this really interesting, I would consider eloquent speech about the future of the election, social media, how it's turning information, and a real negative picture of his future, to me, it seemed, where he kind of saw his end was coming. He talked about a Supreme Court justice saying that they're going to legislate him out of existence. And he talked about the corporations that control Google, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and how the media that he grew up in, when you knew him, when you were having those conversations with him, that media where you jumped into the internet and you could become anything. It was this Wild West with bold, bright colors. He termed it now, they put you in corporate ghettos. So you can have creativity within the corporately constructed. It reminds me of like my kids, when we lived in New York, they would go for recess and they were allowed to play four different games that were monitored by the teachers. Remember when we were kids, you could just play? That was kind of how he termed the internet today, where it's too structured and it's taken all bright colors and creativity out of it.
Well, he had a television show for a while, didn't he? I think he was on CNN for a little bit. And that thing it was Fox News, right? And it crashed and burned. And I think it was because he was constrained by that format of being on TV, and he wasn't able to, you know, he wasn't able to create his own boundary. He wasn't able to create his own rules. He had to play by the television rules, and it wasn't a very good fit for him at all.
That's a good point. I love that show. I went back and watched every episode in research for this book. And Matt, but so I include some details about the show that were never released in my book too, which was that Matt intentionally crashed and burned. He didn't like the travel, was the truth of it. He was traveling from LA to New York. It was taking a toll on him. And he posted a story about that had Matt, who's pro-life, posted a story of an aborted fetus. And there was some discussion with Fox about whether he should be able to post it. But Matt did the crash and burn thing at that point. And he went head to head with Ailes. He went head to head with Murdoch, and he finally did it. There was an agreement and he left the show. But he could have stayed there for a while. The ratings weren't amazing, but they were good enough. I think he sabotaged it intentionally. And that's what he told friends.
Matthew Leshak, thank you so much for your time. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I can't believe I didn't get a hold of you for my book. I'm bummed out about that.
The book is The Drudge Revolution, The Untold Story of How Talk Radio, Fox News, and a Gift Shop Clerk with an Internet Connection Took Down the Mainstream Media. It's available now. Remember to leave us a rating and review online. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us grow our audience. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. I'm Brian Schott.